The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Such a pleasure to bring Matt Walsh on. Matt Walsh with a new documentary or it's a pure documentary or a different kind of, well, it's from the same guy that brought you What is a Woman? And you know it's going to be good. Matt Walsh coming out with Am I Racist? Matt, it is great to have you on. Welcome, sir.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Best beard on television, Matt. When I grow up, I would like to have your beard. Are you selling those by chance?
I'm not, but that's the best compliment you can pay me. So I really, I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, glad to hear that. Hey, over the weekend, went to see Reagan, and I really enjoyed that film. And something tells me next weekend I'm going to have to be going to see Am I Racist? Give me the underpinnings of what drove you into this. It seems like a natural outcropping or place to go pick up on from What is a Woman, right?
Yeah, and Reagan, by the way, is a great movie, and I think it's great that to have two of these movies in the theaters at the same time. It's just an amazing thing. This is our follow up to What is a Woman, which was an investigation of gender ideology and the sort of gender craze that has grabbed hold of society, and now we're dealing with race and the DEI scam, I would call it, what they call the anti-racist scam. And if you watch What is a Woman, you'll see similarities in the kind of tone and approach. But we did take this a different direction in that in this film, we decided that, I'm going to go into this rather than being skeptical. In fact, it'll be the opposite. And I'm going to believe anything these people tell me as I'm starting my own anti-racist journey. And I'll let them guide me on my journey and just kind of take me down the rabbit hole, putting their beliefs into practice, so that rather than telling the audience, hey, this stuff is crazy, here's what happens if you believe it, we're hoping to show the audience so that you can watch the movie and see, like, this is what happens when you actually take these ideas to heart.
It's really interesting. It's an interesting technique to use it this way, and I admire that aspect of What is a Woman, because you would ask simple questions trying to tease out the truth of it. And so a similar technique here in which you just let people talk and say what they're thinking, and you're not openly hostile with them, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, right, exactly. There's no open hostility from me. The only hostility comes the other direction at certain points in the movie. I mean, I get the cops called on me at least once in the movie, and I'm not yelling at people. I'm not. I'm certainly not attacking anyone. In fact, it's the opposite. I'm presenting a very sympathetic character. I'm being very open to their views. And part of the reason why we had to approach it that way is, there's the comedy of it, the satire, which is, I hope, entertaining for the audience.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Also, we have to create an environment where these people are willing to be honest about what they actually think. We have to create what they would call a safe space for them so they can be honest and reveal, as you say, let them reveal their own worldview, and that's what we tried to do in the film.
What institutions do you end up visiting? Can you name any at this point in time?
Yeah, it's we talked to a number of DEI consultants and experts, all of which are prominent in the field. A few would be recognizable, even the people who don't follow it that closely. Robin DiAngelo, probably the biggest one.
Oh, sure.
Most people know her,
sure.
Author of White Fragility. We also go to different DEI kind of seminars. We go to something called Race to Dinner, which is an event where white women in particular have a dinner, and they invite these two women, Syra Rao and Regina Jackson, to come to dinner. And they pay them, and they come to dinner, and they just, like, call the white women racist for 2 hours.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You pay big money to get beaten up by her, right? it's amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's a real thing that people actually pay money for this. And we were able to get in the room for one of these race-to-dinner struggle sessions, and it's quite eye-opening.
You know, Matt, I think it's important that you're going down this and documenting this and going down this path, because this is one of the biggest and fattest cards that I think the left plays all the time, in which racism is supposed to shut down all conversation. And it kind of reminds me of there was one time on Fox News I saw there was some college protests going on in New York City. And there was a little Jewish New York woman, maybe about 4'11", you know, one of those kind of people. And she was getting in the face of one of these New York University or NYU people that was protesting racism or something like that. And so they called this little woman a racist. And what she yelled back at him always stuck in my mind. She said, "Is that all you got?" And I thought that was an interesting response to it. I wonder if you ever get to that point in this movie. Am I a racist?
Yeah, I think that's actually the right response. That you know, because the left will wield the label racist, just like any other, you know, bigot, homophobe, so on and so on.
Yeah,
sexist. Like they wield all of these terms as a cudgel, just to beat their opponents into submission. And the only way to counteract it really is just to say, "Hey, I don't, you know, is that all you got? Like, I don't care that you think that of me." And that's not because I am that, but just because that label that you are putting on me has no power over me. That's the only effective message. When you get into trying to like justify yourself and prove, "Oh, no, I'm not racist. That's not true." When you go that route, it takes you kind of where this film takes me, because in the movie I'm sort of playing this person who is desperately trying to like prove that I'm not racist and listening to these grifters and allowing them to guide me. And we see, you know, when you watch the movie, you'll see where it takes me. It takes me some pretty uncomfortable places, I have to say.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing it. Am I Racist in theaters September 13th. Matt Walsh, of course, the star of this. And out of curiosity, is this going to be like a series? Where might you go after this one?
Well, yeah, this is our second movie, and I have discovered that making movies is a lot of fun, and also it's a great way to get your message across. So I am going to keep doing it. As far as what the next one is, I have no idea at this point, but check back in a year or two, and we'll see.
And, of course, the humor is truth. Is truth only quicker, you know? And I think the way you're able to deliver this in an entertaining fashion, you get the message across, and it's so needed right now. Am I Racist in theaters? In fact, you can get tickets for it at Tinseltown. Friday is when it's going to start. We'll get all your information up. And, Matt, thank you so much for having joined the show for a few minutes. Good luck on this, okay? Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
12 minutes after 7 on KMED and 99.3 KBXG. This is the Bill Meyer Show. Number here is 770-5633. We have the hand of the update and a bunch more, and some of your calls if you wish.
Jasper's Cafe, voted Medford's best burgers for 14 years running. Jasper's has been a local tradition.
70 KMED. Here's Bill Meyer.
Delighted you're here. 17 after 7. Dr. Dennis Powers back for a Where Past Meets Present. We'll be bringing him on about an hour from now, but between now and then, how about your calls and things that you feel like talking about this morning? We could talk about your thoughts about the upcoming debate tomorrow. We could talk about the plan for more than 100 low-income housing units in a four-story building over by Les Schwab on Central Avenue in Medford. I don't think that is a part of the climate-friendly, equitable community, but doesn't that strike you as a little bit of getting people into the stack and pack downtown living where there are still no stores? But maybe that's where the plan is, that they'll force stores in, you know, at this point, because that would be part of climate-friendly, equitable community. You'd have to have your gardens that you would end up toiling in, and, of course, you know, everything would be within 15 minutes, probably implying that you wouldn't be allowed someday to leave in 15 minutes. But I'm kind of getting ahead of myself right now. Speaking of the climate-friendly, equitable community drive, yesterday was the 4th anniversary of the Olmeda fire. And I, unfortunately, still saw much of the same kind of coverage in most of the media organs that I've come to expect for several years now, in which, you know, what lessons have we learned from it? And it is still presented or insinuated that this was somehow a wildfire, that this was just a naturally occurring wildfire. And have you noticed how there seems to be such a downplaying or an omission or lack of talk about it having been an arson fire, a human set fire, was the origin of this in a 60 mile per hour wind event. And remember, they ended up finding other people that were doing hinky things too. Remember the guy in the van up by Green Springs with the propane tanks on the roof? And there was the other dirtbag that they ended up catching by Phoenix that had tried to set some of the fires there. The system's done a pretty good job of kind of downplaying this, hasn't it? And they would have you think that that it was just a naturally occurring fire. Now, I can't tell you that it was a whole big-time conspiracy. Maybe you just get to the point where, you know, wind events come, big 60-mile-per-hour thing, and it's already been hot and dry, and some people who are a bubble off plum, their inner Beavis and Butthead comes out there. I remember, fire, 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 you know, and maybe there's some of that going on, but they always make it sound as if somehow it's climate change. As if climate change somehow made people say, fire, 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 and set things ablaze down there by the Ashland Dog Park as it ends up crawling up the various greenways and up into Talent and into Phoenix. Killing a couple of people. Was it a couple of people, I think, ended up dying in that? But destroying thousands of homes and businesses. Ended up putting up a video on Facebook about that over the weekend. One of the many videos I had taken from that time. It was an interesting look back to see what we've done. But they always talk about the lessons. And I noticed that in the Rogue Valley Times, the Ashland emergency manager, who ironically is named Kelly Burns. Kelly Burns, right? Saying that you can't prevent these things. You can only manage these kind of emergencies. And I don't know if I necessarily agree with him on this one, that you can't prevent this. All you can do is manage bumdom and criminal arson going on within your community. I mean, do you think he's right about that? At least he didn't say climate change. Boy, that's something that the Alan Jornet types of the world have been insinuating ever since that. Oh, boy, you know, these hot fires, you know, sweeping through our cities based on climate change. Well, no, you had a hot, dry summer. You had a 60-mile-an-hour wind event, and you had criminals or dirtbags. I don't know if it's people with political agendas or not, but, you know, when they touch it off intentionally, we call that a crime. That's not climate change. Climate change is not a crime, even assuming that it is. But that's something that, of course, has really been running through my mind about it. It's been 4 years now, and they still talk about hotter fires and everything else because of climate change. And, of course, never any talk about the fact that Mother Nature is going to harvest these trees if we don't do something with them and manage them. Part of having the greenway and managing them is making sure that things get trimmed up. Maybe under the climate-friendly, equitable community, we'll have to pave over the greenway. That way, no more bum fires. What do you think about them? 722-770-5633-770-KMED. Okay, it's one little disappointing thought over the weekend. Reagan movie, number one. Go see that. Love that. I said a lot about that last hour, though. And what's on your mind? We go to the phones at 770-5633. Go to line 3. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Good morning, Bill. Tom.
Hey, Tom.
Hey.
How are you doing this morning, huh?
Oh, doing fine. Not sure why you were slow getting on the air, but I'm glad you're here.
Okay. Well, let me explain it. Several hours at Providence Emergency Room last night with Mom, and then ended up getting her home, and it was just late night. And so I just needed a little extra time, time. That's all.
You're excused.
Okay.
That's a good segue, what you had about, the Rogue Valley Times and so forth. I really believe that they seem to be just an arm of the global establishment trying to say everything's due to climate change. Of course, a global crisis needs a global solution, which is global mm-hmm. government.
Right.
I wonder, and so I really see so much mind control going on. And Comrade Kamala has really come out saying the government needs to regulate all speech. And I'd like to do a quote, one quote from Paul Roberts from Lou Rockwell this morning. He says, "We have reached the point where almost anything said or written is hate speech, racist, misogynist, mm-hmm. threat to democracy, offensive, insensitive, anti-Semitic, or Russian propaganda." That's it.
Yeah, and he's got that about right, which is why I insisted I don't care about those labels. I just don't care about the labels any longer. I used to be worried about getting called that. You can't.
Well, of course, that's the personal level. But what's really going on is just this whole election. People don't know what the hell's going on. They don't really know how bad Kamala is because mm-hmm. of all this control of speech. And speech is not just a freedom issue. It's one of its aspects is it's highly protective. It prevents people going off the rails.
It protects the estate. Well, what the speech controls are about, it protects the status quo. It protects the establishment is what it does, doesn't it?
If it's controlled, if we do not have free speech, that's what ends up happening. And that's why the establishment does everything it can to bash free speech. It doesn't want any criticism. And I'm just pointing out the essentialness of free speech in order to have freedom.
The other aspect that the control on speech and the demonization of certain types of speech, and by the way, I don't think there's any such thing as hate speech. Hate speech is a false statement when it comes right down to it. Hate speech is really just disagreeing with the regime, is really how that's been defined these days. Do you agree?
Well,
that's really what it means.
That's the current definition, yes.
Yeah, but then it ends up becoming a crime if we let it. The point being, though, is that the more that seeps into society, the more people start to self-censor. And that's even worse because those are people cowing themselves. It's kind of like, I'm going to beat myself before the state beats me, that kind of thing.
Oh, absolutely. I'm experiencing that. I have a lot of criticism of what's going out of Salem, and I've been writing a few anonymous letters in that direction, but I feel like if I really stand up and tell them what I think and so forth, and they will come after me with knives in one way or the other. And so I'm self-censoring already, and I imagine most people are. But I keep saying we got to use our free speech while we still have it, because if they take it away, it's not coming back anytime soon.
And that's why when I watched Reagan over the weekend, I had such a great feeling or memory of that time, because what that was a fight for, whether we agreed on everything Reagan did or not, it still was a fight for the freedom of speech, freedom of association, everything that Russians and people that were in the East Bloc were not allowed to do. At that point in time, right? They pretend to work, they pretend to pay us, that kind of stuff. But the part which was disheartening after watching Reagan is to realize how much like the former Soviet Union we have become in those ensuing days.
Absolutely. That's where we're headed. And I sure appreciate you and KMED while we have it, and we better use it to the max, because the Alan Jernays of the world and Pam Marsh and Jeff Golden are out with their sharpening knives to take away free speech. They're just full-on communists, and they don't even know that they are.
They don't even recognize it, can't even see it. Appreciate the call as always, Tom. Very thoughtful. 770-5633, line 4. Is up. Good morning. Hi. Who's this? Welcome.
Good morning. This is Jerry.
Jerry, what's on your mind today?
Well, I was thinking people don't seem to have a very long memory. Back in the, I think it was the early 70s, a particular pornographer said a bunch of sleazy things about a prominent Christian figure and was sued. The Supreme Court ruled that it was parody, therefore it was protected. But the killer line in their decision was that only offensive speech needs to be protected because non-offensive speech doesn't.
That's right. It's very true.
All these hate speech is protected speech. People have a right to be wrong.
And that also includes something that the right has been really big on, is trying to crack down on anti-Semitism or anti-Muslim or anti-whatever it is. Listen, speech is speech. And
there's things about Muslim to be worried about.
You have to be the cure for people speaking, if you're Jewish and you're upset because someone's being anti-Semitic, well, the cure for that is to not ban anti-Semitic speech, but is to come back with more of your own speech and fight it and show where it's wrong. And I think that's where we've kind of forgotten a lot of this right now.
And one of our best weapons is just ignore it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, get a thick skin, right?
It'll go away when it's fruitless.
Yeah, get a thick skin. Yeah. It's 7:30. Let me head to line three again. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Hey, Bill. Great conversation this morning. This is Wild Salmon.
Well, thank you, Steve. What's going on?
Well, I mentioned before I was reading a book called The Indispensable Right, Freedom in the Age of Rage by a guy named Jonathan Turley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've been talking about him. He's the one, you see him quite a bit on Fox News as an analyst, right? Legal analyst.
Yes, and he's actually a Democrat.
I know.
But this is a historical view of free speech all the way back to the Greeks, and it goes through what happened. And an interesting point is that when the Constitution of the United States was written, and the first, George Washington had his 4 or 8 years of presidency, the next president was John Adams. John Adams started persecuting people for sedition. He didn't like being talked bad about, and so they actually put people in jail for saying anything bad about John Adams.
That's right, seditious speech, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. And the next president was Jefferson, and he was a free speech guy, but he turned around and did the same thing. What dawned on me is, while these people were great thinkers, it's very hard to run a government.
And especially harder to run a government, though, if people are criticizing it. But if we're going to be a free people, is it our job to not criticize the government so that it makes it easier for them?
Well, nothing has changed. Everything is still the same. And people in power want to stay in power. And this book kind of goes over in time all the things that have happened. And it just kind of lets you understand the background, maybe, of what human nature is and why it is so important for people in power to control speech. We're seeing it's not a microcosm. It's a macrocosm of what happens when power has a lot of control.
And the danger of free speech control today, unlike in Jefferson or Adams or Washington's time, is that it's very easy to completely shut people down with the click of a mouse and a shutdown of your banking account, a shutdown of your social media account, in which, you know, the plug is just pulled on you immediately like that. And they didn't have that power then.
Well, they did, because people were printing newspapers criticizing them, and they were shutting down the newspapers, breaking their printing press. So they were kind of doing the same thing. It was less quick, and it wasn't subtle at all, because it was the same thing. It was trying to make the point that how dare you oppose me, and the English kings did the same thing. I mean, it's amazing how people who wrote the Constitution, who gave us the freedom of speech, when given power, turned around and did the same thing. It's
human nature. It's human nature to want to vanquish and control your enemy's ability to criticize you, because people don't like to be criticized. I get it.
And
right?
if you have a lot of power, if you're somebody who has billions of dollars, I guess you're just afraid of losing it, and you don't want anybody to oppose your position, so you turn around and use that money as a weapon against the rest of society. I mean, Zuckerberg is a good example of that.
Well, apparently what we're looking at right now is a system which is very afraid. Do you agree?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's not a sign of strength, because a strong United States and a strong culture would not be concerned about people critiquing it or criticizing it. Thanks for the take on the Turley book, okay? Let me go to the next one. Good morning. Hi, KMED, KBXG. This is Bill. Who's this?
Hey, this is Checking In Charlie. How you doing today?
Checking In Charlie. Where are you checking in from, Charlie?
I'm checking in from Benson, California, or Benson, North Carolina.
Benson, North Carolina. Welcome. What's on your mind today?
I'm just calling in reference to the Malamita fire that happened a year ago or so.
Yeah, 4 years ago, actually.
Yeah, 4 years ago, I mean. And, well, when I drove back down, I was up there for it. I was in Gold Hill. When I went back down to Reno a few days later, there must have been anywhere from 15 to 20 spots on the side of the road where someone also had attempted to start fires along that route. I think 300 miles.
Yeah.
Going between there. And given the time, with the Mantifas running around and doing what they were doing, and the presidential election about ready to occur at that point in time, there was a lot more going on than just one person out there setting fires.
Yeah, and I would agree with you. But there has been very little, ability to take those individuals and prosecute them for anything. A lot of these people just ended up disappearing into the system or into the woodwork, you know, that kind of thing. And
that they did.
Yeah, and so you check it in, Charlie. You know, you understand what was going on. I think we understand what was going on. But can we prove what was going on? No. That's where we find ourselves at this point. But the one thing I think we can prove is that wasn't climate change that set those fires, okay?
No, sir, it wasn't. And let's just say if some of those would have got out of control, you would have had those big fires all the way down into Reno. But they were managed to get them out between an acre to 2 acres each time.
Yeah. Very good.
Set right off of the highway.
Hey, since you're in here from North Carolina, that's where my brother lives, how do you think North Carolina is going to go? Kind of on the bubble on a Trump versus Harris thing or not? What are you thinking?
You know, it is definitely a bubble, but I believe Trump is going to win it for sure in North Carolina. There's a lot of people out there. I ain't heard anybody saying, Biden-Harris, but there's a lot more people out there talking about Trump and what they've had to go through over the last 4 years.
All right, Charlie. Good hearing from you. Thanks for the call. 736. And if you are online, if you're on hold right now, I will get your call right after news, okay? 770-5633. This is the Bill Myers Show. We have one open line if you wanted to join in.
Your smile is the key to your health and confidence. Did you also know that research has concluded people have almost as much fear about finding a new dentist?
.com. Hi, I'm Steven with Steven Westfall Roofing Inc., and I'm on KMED.
7:42. I went to see Reagan over the weekend. Absolutely fabulous movie. It was long at 2 hours and 20 minutes. It could have been another hour, and I still would have been. It was just such fascinating history retold in a entertaining fashion. And like I said, I think about the only real creative license that they did is that they made Nancy Reagan much nicer and sweeter, I think, than she was in real life, because she was a pit bull. She was a pit bull protecting Ronnie from all of the nastiness of the swamp in those days. And they were definitely a team for sure. But, you know, I understand you got to, you know, sit there and play it. But I thought it was great start to finish. Interesting to see the influence of his mother, you know, especially. Father was a drunk, problematic, and I think always he wanted to rise above where his father was capable of. Good stuff. Really was. And I'm hoping, I really do hope, that finally, in the near future, that Republican parties stop Lincoln Day dinners and just stick with Reagan birthday dinners. I think it's a much more positive, much more contemporary Republican to be celebrating these days. Who's with me, Republican parties? Okay. 770-5633, 770-KMED. By the way, my email is bill at billmyershow.com. We'll talk about some of those coming up. Joel's been hanging on. I think this is, this is Joel. Hey, Joel, you wanted to talk about some things. Go ahead.
Well, a couple of days prior to the Alameda fire, characters dressed in dark black suits would show up late night at Medford Airport and some other airports, and just days later, over 8 fires occurred within a 7-hour period the same day as the Alameda fire. And yet after talking to Tech and Charlie, it appears that more than that was started.
Yeah. And also you had, and remember we had the activists that were all hanging out in Hawthorne Park too. Remember that brouhaha all going on at the same time, as if somehow that's climate change. And then the fires just happened to crop up, right? Happened
exactly.
In a 60 mile an hour wind event. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they just timed it perfect, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Appreciate the call there. Let me go to Dave. Hello, Dave. You wanted to talk about that Josephine County issue I was mentioning last hour, which was the, they're arguing it's between the treasurer and the chief financial officer or the financial director, Josephine County.
Well, if you have a company, you have a chief financial officer, and you, they don't call them treasurers in companies. They call them bookkeepers
mm-hmm.
and to keep track of how the money's spent, what they take in, and, you know, like that. So a chief executive officer needs to know what the financial state is of any particular entity, mm-hmm. whether it be county or a or, you know, anything. So the financial director should have access to what the county's taking in, where it's going out, and then figure out how to either increase without taxes, increase its finances so that it doesn't go bankrupt. That's what a chief executive financial officer does.
Yeah, and so
that'd be the same thing as a financial director
okay.
for the county government.
Right. Now, you heard me when I was talking about the, battle, turf war kind of between the Josephine County finance director and the treasurer. And the treasurer is saying, well, doesn't want to cough up some of this information. I just look at this as public information that, you should cooperate. Now, I know that technically the board cannot order another elected official.
Oh, yes, they can. This is over the budget. This is
But that's what I was getting at, though, because they do have, budgeting power. I honestly think that this is kind of a turf war thing, and Josephine County, like probably most counties, you have a lot of longtime employees that think that somehow they run things rather than the elected officials,
Of course they do, because the elected official comes and goes, and they're there no matter what. That's why I say that they should, in some of these positions, should be timed out, where they have to return to the private sector to see how things run before they can come back and work for the government. I believe in, short term, if you're going to work for a county government, which I have as a temporary, that's what all of them should be, temporary employees, and they should go at the end of a certain term.
Yeah, I would say that I think the longest that you should be able to take a government paycheck, what, maybe 10 years? How about that?
10 years, and then you have to be out 10 years before you can come back.
Yeah. That would be, I forget his name. Remember there's a guy I used to talk to? I think, I don't even know if he's still alive anymore, but he was up in the Springfield area, and he was in declining health for quite some time. But he was the one, he was like the PERS Avenger, the guy that was always cracking down.
Oh, I remember him.
Remember him?
I don't remember his name.
And I'm going to have to look it up. Gosh, it's been years since I talked to him, but he was getting pretty ill near the end. And he was saying that that he always had he had an act that he would jokingly refer to as the Everybody Gets a Chance Act, in which everybody at some point gets a chance to work to the work for the government for just a little while, though. And that way,
right.
You don't
temporary.
Have this whole idea that you're going to work for the government your entire life and then have the taxpayers also pay your pension to on top of that needs to go away. And I would agree with him on that.
Well, and they could do that, because they could just make all government employees get a 401k.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks for the call there, Dave. Gosh, his name was Fred something. Gosh, Fred, what was his name? That's going to bug me all morning. I'm going to look back at my notes later on. Let me go to Gene. Hello, Gene. What's going on?
Hey. I was calling about a Robin Hood movie I watched I'd never seen before, and it talked about the Catholic Church funding both sides of the Crusades. They were the good guys, knights in shining armor fighting against the Muslims, but the Catholic Church was funding the Muslims.
Really? How was the Catholic Church doing this, according to the Robin Hood movie? I'm not that deep into Robin Hood lore or Catholic Church history, so you might be catching me a little flat-footed on it, okay?
Well, they were just telling people whatever they wanted to hear, and the Catholic Church, according to the Catholic Church, was the good guys, and they were not going to get to heaven if you did not believe the Catholic Church.
And the other thing is that how can you be the good guy unless you have a bad guy you're working against? So it's kind of like the United States needed the Soviet Union, right? And then it needed the Muslims as the enemy,
yeah,
right?
Just Same way with what's going on with Russia and Trump right now. Trump is working for the Russians. No, we're the communists now.
Yeah, it does seem that way, unfortunately. I don't like saying that. The Reagan movie certainly bore that out, how much we have been Sovietized ever since. We go to line one. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Good morning, Bill.
Hi.
Am I? Yes, I'm calling from Grants Pass.
Yeah, what's your name?
I just wanted to, Bonnie.
Hi, Bonnie.
I just wanted to throw a ringer in your movie there, and I'm neither Democrat or Republican, but I do know when Reagan was in that he, I had a brother-in-law that had a diseased heart that couldn't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
But they took him off of disability Social Security, and he died. And he had three children at home. And I do know he's the one that put in the tax on tips. He's the one that taxed unemployment, of all things.
Uh-huh.
And I just, you know, nobody ever mentions any of that stuff.
I'd have to look that up because I don't think that, maybe he was. He could have been president when that happened. I don't know. I don't remember everything about it, Bonnie.
He was, and if you look it up, he's the one that eliminated your mental institutions. That's why, and I understand, I know that for a fact.
That's not a fact, actually. It's not, because that was something which was done by the California State Legislature. Reagan happened to be governor, you know, during that time.
Uh-huh,
and by the
uh-huh.
way, that was something that was happening. That was a nationwide contagion, if you want to call it, because, you know, there was this feeling that mental institutions were cruel. Well, what replaced it wasn't any better, though, unfortunately. But that was something. But yeah, he was. He was a governor when that was happening. You're right.
Right. And not only that, but, I mean, now you got children in schools that should be in kind of a mental institution, but now our schools have to take care of them. It costs a lot of money, and mm-hmm. it doesn't do the child any good or anybody that's in that classroom.
Okay.
I know that for a fact, too. But anyway, that's all. I just wanted to comment on that because I know he had his good points, great personality, good, you know, whatever. He did give the rich a tax cut, but I just go for ever who's good, good, ever who's bad, bad. You know, you just got to separate it.
All right. Well, I appreciate the call. Thanks for making that,
Bonnie.
Thank you. 752, grab another for the break. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Oh, hello?
Hello. Hi.
Hi, Bill. It's Francine.
Oh, it's Francine. How you doing, Francine? You know, Francine, we need a theme for you. What theme do you have?
Well, you come up with a good one, and I'll think about it, too, okay?
Uh-huh.
Okay, then Lucretia and I can have...
No, I don't want it to be Francine the Talking or Francine the Talking Mule
no,
or whatever it is.
No.
All right.
The only song I ever heard that had my name in it was ZZ Top. It was Francine, My Little Teenage Queen, and that is not going to cut it.
Oh, that was... Gosh, I forgot about that ZZ Top song. Francine, My Little... Man, that's... one of their better songs, but I'll let
not
that go.
Not one of their better songs and not a good image. I mean, you know, teenagers, come on, guys.
Okay, well, how about Tush for you then, huh?
Oh, my God, no. But listen, I want to make comments about two different people because this morning I was wandering around on the internet and I came across a book written by, I just had it up, a woman... named Graber, her last name is Garabar, you know, called, where she's, I sent you the link to it, too. She was calling out Howard Zinn and his...
Howard Zinn and the People's History of the United States, right?
Right, there's that, yeah, and he was in, apparently, according to her, he was a member of the Communist Party.
Of course he was.
And then the other person I wanted to...
And by the way, this is the history book that most of your kids have been trained in.
This is the one that everyone, they all went for it. They all adopted it. And there's another person who helped put communism into our schools, and that is Ronald Reagan.
In what way?
Some of the things he signed to allow coming into the schools, it's been a while since I've read it and looked into it and everything, but Charlotte Thompson Isserby, who was the head of policy for the Department of Education and worked closely with Reagan. She swears up and down that he signed a few things that allowed communism into the school, and I cannot remember how it is, and I urge people...
I read that book, and I think it has to do with exchange services and various other things. And so, yeah, there is some truth to that.
Well,
like I said...
Yeah, and I mean, there were some... more documents I was looking at the other day where she, you know, one of them, I can send it to you too. It was a list of all the letters she wrote to him, trying to communicate with him. And she ended up got fired for bringing home documents that she wasn't supposed to take. She was a super whistleblower. I mean, she was hardcore, and she was brilliant. I'm so sorry she's gone, because she was an amazing woman. And anybody that's curious should look into her work.
All right. Always appreciate the call. Thank you for that, Francine. 755. Good morning. Hi, who's this?
Morning, Bill. Steve in Sunny Valley.
What's going on in Sunny Valley today, Steve?
Well, that case that he was talking about with the pornographer and the preacher was Flint versus Falwell.
Mm-hmm.
And it was over an ad that Larry Flint put in Hustler magazine that depicted Falwell's mother as a drunk that drank in the outhouse.
Exactly.
But, the other thing is Trump derangement syndrome isn't the first derangement syndrome. My grandfather had Reagan derangement syndrome. Bad. And he had a framed, personalized letter from Ronald Reagan when he was governor of California for the work he did for the California Aqueduct, because he was a hydrologist. And he still hated the man. And it was the ACLU that closed down the mental facilities nationwide with a lawsuit claiming they were cruel and unusual, and they did not give the mentally ill any say in how they were treated.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because that's where I was getting at with the person, because they always say, well, Reagan was the one that shut down the mental institutions. No, he just happened to be the governor back when the state legislators were in the process of shutting that down, and in reaction to lawsuits. You're right.
From the ACLU, a leftist organization.
And the ACLU has done some good things, but the vast majority of it has been usually to foster more disorder onto the land, unfortunately. I hate to say that.
Right. And now they have their thumb on the scale, like the
Southern Poverty Law Center. Yeah.
Right. They are both putting their thumb on the scale and creating worse conditions for the people they're trying to help.
Which makes me think that really that's the purpose.
Yeah. It's kind of like the NGOs that are helping homelessness by keeping them homeless.
Because how do you bring in that new society unless you're able to bring so much disorder that people will be clamoring for the new society to save us?
And all these people in the NGO are bringing in $150,000 to $200,000 a year.
Yep, at taxpayer expense. Appreciate the call. Thanks for checking in, Steve. True, 758.
Since 1938, Blue Star of Hokanson Realty. News Talk 106.3 KMED. This is the Bill Myers Show.
And this is KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. Dick Cheney endorses Kamala Harris. Oh, boy, I'll tell you. Protecting the blob matters more than anything else, eh, Dick? Oh, got to have the blob. Got to have the never-ending war. I guess that figures that would come out of Harris more so than Trump. Probably more easily controllable. Who knows? Emails of the day, sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson at Central Point Family Dentistry, next to the new Mazatlan Mexican restaurant in Central Point. Check him out at centralpointfamilydentistry.com. Call for your appointment. I have had much service there. Been quite happy with them, all right? And we'll give an email of the day. One of many here. Bob Chan writes me about Peggy. Peggy called in from Joe County the other day. Bill, Peggy and her husband have been regulars at Medford City Council meetings, chastising the city and Medford police regarding their inhumane treatment of the homeless. She and her husband are regulars at Hawthorne Park giving away freebies. I asked her if she's giving them a fish or if she's offering fishing lessons. As they have some church affiliation, I don't think they're handing out needles. Her heart's in the right place achieving a methodology so as to not enable, needs some tweaking. Kind regards, Bob. Bob, I appreciate you sharing your take on that, okay? A lot of people did. Dale from Medford says, hey, Bill, I find myself wondering if someone is going to work for a TSA-type inspection at every school of backpacks, books, and other objects because of what's now becoming a bit too frequent for anyone's comfort. School resource officers are sorely needed and should be very competent in recognizing human behavior before such incidents occur. It seems the one in Georgia saved many lives. But when we don't know how much ammo the young man had, Other RSOs in the past have shown much cowardice when it comes to these sort of things, not to mention many regular law enforcement people. Certain teachers should also be authorized to have equipment to stop such things from happening. I have two grown sons, but if they had not already graduated from public schools and were needing the schooling now, there's no way I would send them to public schools for more than one reason, but two are the type of instructions and the courses being taught these days. Dale, I appreciate your writing. Thing being, the weakness of relying on the school resource officer is that you have someone in uniform that is known to be armed. And so I think the weakness is that a lot of times they just want to take out the school resource officer first here. Better, I think, to distribute it should be with anybody who's an adult, I should say, could possibly be carrying, I think, is how it should be done in a proper world. But we shall see about that. Got a lot of questions about it. Now, the person that wrote me this email wants to remain anonymous for right now. Bill, fasting and the Yucca app. You have mentioned on several occasions that you and Linda have been playing with intermittent fasting and eliminating seed oils for your health. I would like to share with you Dr. Mindy Pels on YouTube. Many videos, written several books on the subject of intermittent fasting. She focuses on women's health, but the principles apply to men also. Be great if you could interview her on your show one day. Well, I will certainly try to do that. Sounds interesting. Pebble in my shoe, though. Last summer, during extreme fire season, Bill, we were mowing our 1 acre, mostly green lawn, and the edge had dried out a little bit and was brown. A Forest Service truck showed up and told us that we couldn't mow the dry grass, even though we had 300 gallons of water with a fire pump on the back of my flatbed. We certainly don't want to start a fire and stopped mowing the dry grass and waited until fire season was over. However, last week I was driving to Ashland and I observed the state of Oregon mowing the dry grass between the north and southbound lanes. Fire danger extreme, no fire truck present. My grass was mostly green with a dry patch. The state of Oregon mowing all dry grass. Now, I don't have a problem following the rules as long as we all follow the same rules. Okay, well, anonymous emailer, the problem with this is that the whole idea of being government is that you make the rules. What fun is it if you have to follow all the rules of the little people? But yeah, I get your irritation. That's a good one prior to Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday tomorrow.